Hey yo, and here we go, another episode of We Talk Music on the air and in your ear. Once again, I am Martin, joined by the King of the Casters, Mr. Brett Podcast. And Brett, please introduce today's guest.
Well, we're super lucky today to have a singer-songwriter who is just a wonderful vocalist. He's got a brand new album out, and we're super, super excited to talk about All This Time Running with Craig Cardiff. Craig, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. Thanks for making time for me to come on.
Well, we're happy to have you on the show. Like I say, you just released the new album, All This Time Running, and what a great sound it is. It's, you know, it's just so nice, and there's so many. Like, I love all the instruments and all the different sounds that you've got on it. So, you know, why don't you kind of bring us through the recording of this one?
Sure. Well, so the album was written over the summer, fall, leading up to shutdown. I was touring often in the U.S., and so a lot of the people are asking, oh, was it intentional to write about Wyoming or Bryant Park or all these places? Like what was the idea behind it? And the truth was, those were the songs that just ended up at the top of the 80 songs that were.
Oh my lord!
Wow. We're just like the ones that kind of kept coming to the top. And so it was in that fall that I was connected with True North, and then we confirmed kind of the agreement and working together, and had. The majority, well, obviously all written, but then also sorting out the recording of additional instruments. We had all the studio sessions booked kind of like January into April, and then everything changed. And so the idea was to, just like everybody else did, figure it out. It's like we were walking around in the dark holding onto each other's coats, sorting out how we could record remotely. And to be honest, like before, I was doing 150 dates a year, you know, usually two or three things a day. But if you'd said to me, Craig, you need to stop and take a month off, that wasn't even in the realm of possibility for me. And so things that were positive or things that were different in being able to work on this album is that all we had was time. The label was, I was surprised. I wasn't sure, you know, when we got over the kind of every 2 week idea, you know, it would have been very reasonable for the label to pause, as many labels did, to pause everything or ask for a delay. And it was the opposite. It was like, no, it's an important record and hurry up, figure it out. And that's appreciated though. When you feel like, I don't know what it was like for you guys, but I felt like everybody kind of had been punched in the face and stomach at the same time. And so to have kind of a thing to center on and have work to do, and especially work to do together with friends. And so a lot of these people, we've been trying to schedule with them forever because they were also touring. And so all of a sudden everybody was kind of just stopped. And we were able to, as once we figured out how to record remotely, we were able to get down to the business of finishing the record.
Is that common for you to have so many songs to choose from during the recording of an album?
No, I mean, for me, I wanted, like, I don't feel it's like it's a lot. Like, I look at other songwriters who are like, you know, we whittled it down from the 150. And in some cases, it might just be sketches. I'm like, how do you get 100? Like, why do you have to make us feel bad? Like, 150 is a lot. So I just think, like, being intentional about crafting and starting on things, even if you don't finish them, you just get to a point where they're documented. So you can even go ahead and just like grab pieces, like this piece works, and cobble together the strongest parts. I was grateful for that.
When you say that these are the songs that filter to the top, what exactly do you mean? Does that mean that these are the songs that worked best together, or these are the songs that you found yourself singing, or what exactly do you mean by filter to the top?
Fair, yeah. So, you know when you have all the good ideas, and just write them down, and then see which ones actually like that you keep coming back to, or you're frustrated, that if you didn't see them through. That's what I mean. Or the ones that have the strongest meaning emotionally, like you care about. Like I do a lot of work with schools, working with students, recording remotely. And then the most common thing that they bring up is, well, I don't have anything to write about. And I'm like, sure you do. What do you love? What do you care about? And it's less so, it's the same issue we have as adults, right? Like, the trick with everybody is to get them talking about the thing they love the most so that their hands are moving and their eyes are so wide they can't even help it. And everybody has that. Like, we all have that. And so I think that's where you start with a song. Write about something that you actually care and connect with heart-wise. And then, so these are songs that I have those that were that for me.
How long does it take you to kind of establish the songs that filter to the top?
I don't know. I mean, I was just talking with another person about this idea, like, because I consider myself a working musician, and so even though I haven't been able to tour, I'm still, that's where I would finish songs, in front of a room. And so that's good and bad. So the question they asked was, would these songs have been different if they'd been toured out and if they'd been played? And I think they would be, but in a way that might not have best served them, because we all have habits, right? Like, you get in front of a room, you manage a room a certain way, and that impacts on how you present material, because I want people to sing along and I want people to connect and remember the chorus and whatever, what the song was about that's presented to them at the beginning. And in this case, there wasn't any of that. So it was like painting for yourself in some cases and just being able to follow that narrative wherever it led.
Do you think that, you know, after this, do you think that you'll want to kind of keep some of this element to your recording, or do you want to kind of go back to the older way?
I don't know. I mean, I think I'm wondering that about everything.
Mm.
Like music, like how much is going to, we just did an event, like a live stream release for the album, and we sold all the tickets through all the venues I'd ever played. Those that are still up and functioning.
Yeah.
And the idea was to do 100 city tour in one night. Like, just ridiculous, right? But the idea that we needed to if the venues aren't important, then how come people are so tired of live streams? And it's because we miss being together and we miss whatever that intangible sharing is that happens in the 20-person room, the 50-person room, the 200-person room. There's an energy we miss. And so I want to keep that. Like, I want to go back to that. And your question is more around recording and intentionality. So, yeah, I mean, I see it as possible now. I think the thing was, I thought it was impossible before, because you get stuck in what you know. You don't know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, to answer your question, yes. Having had this experience, I would pick different parts of it now. But, like, forgive me. Yeah, it was 3 years ago. I was in Hong Kong around this time, working with students and also giving concerts. And then 2 years ago, I was supposed to be in Alaska doing the same thing, doing a bunch of shows and working with schools. If you had told me 3 years ago and 2 years ago, Craig, it's just as good going to do this remotely, I would have declined. But now I see this can be, like, this kind of work or teaching can be done remotely and done well. I think the concert piece, I just miss too much. I want to go back, and when it's safe to do it, I want to go back and keep doing that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. I mean, I think we all want to go back and do that. And I think that, like, I guess I wonder, like, I mean, I think all of the shows will probably get a boost, but it almost feels to me like I would rather have some more intimate shows, because I do want to be that much more connected to the music and the artist when we actually do start getting back into the concerts.
I want to make sure I'm following. Can you say this again for me? So I don't,
I'm just kind of wondering, like I feel like maybe I'll want more of the intimate shows as opposed to the bigger venue shows when we come back. But, like, what do you think ultimately after we come back.
Well, so I guess do you want the intimate shows because you don't feel safe in it?
No, that's not. It's more because I want to feel. It's like you talked about being connected to the music, and I think I want to feel connected to the music, and I know that I'll feel more connected in an intimate setting.
Yes. Okay. Thanks for explaining. So I hope you're, and also when you put it that way, like, you know, all the people who've gone to see massive shows before who are like, wow, that was like $200 to go watch a screen and somebody far away. Like, it sounds like the parents, you know, the parents complaining who took their kids to see Taylor Swift or whatever. It's like, wow, couldn't really see her on stage, but the screen was great. And I think we were going to have an aversion to screens now. Like, I think the idea of going to the 100-person church and seeing a show there will have more appeal. I don't know. Here's what I'm really worried about. When did you guys go see your first shows?
Oh boy. When was that? That would have been, I mean, I guess I probably would have been about between 9 and 11 kind of thing.
Okay, so who was it?
Let's see. It was either the Beach Boys, perhaps the Kingston Trio.
What? Do you have, like, the best parents ever, or you're a runaway? What's going on?
Yeah, my mom did love a lot of a variety of music, so I definitely have wound up seeing, I've seen, like, you know, everybody practically in those wow. early days. You know, Frank Sinatra, I saw him as well, so.
Now you're just bragging. I was like, well, I was going to, like, lead with my Sharon Lewis and Brahm, but boy, that's really bad.
Whoa. Never saw Sharon Lewis and Brahm, though, so that's okay.
You're like, because I saw the Beach Boys and Frank Sinatra, Craig.
Yeah.
I skipped over that step. Didn't go with the training wheels. But the point is, what if that had never happened for you, right? Like I remember going with my friend Garrett, high school friends, and we would go to festivals. And I didn't know any of the bands. I didn't have any money to buy CDs. But man, you felt it, right? You felt the energy of it. And what if all of us, like, think of all the kids who are about on the 13th of March, March 12th, were about to go to the first concert and couldn't. And that's what I worry about. Your question was like, what is it going to be like when we go back? I think that we don't know. That's like, let's just agree that we're not certain. We can take good guesses. But what I do know is everybody who over the last year and a half has not been able to go to a concert might think that it's not important to go and see live music. And so I feel like it's all of our obligation, you know, to, like, show them the good food, and just, like, you know, here's the clean water that you need to drink. And, you know, we have to commit to taking all of our nieces and nephews and our neighbor kids and our own kids to, like, go see live music so that gets, as we come back to normal, air quote, that is our anchor. That's one of our first anchors. Why do you love music? Well, because I was 9, I saw the Beach Boys, of course. I think that's important.
Yeah, it's true. Those are absolutely the things. I think it's really important to be able to get out there, you know, with your kids and just experience, because it doesn't matter half the time, like, what the music is and what the, you know, what it all comes down to, whether you even like it sometimes. It's just the live experience changes things so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I mean, in your case, of course, too, like, you perform live anywhere and everywhere. So, you know, what do you see? Like, do you want to get back to the living rooms? Do you want to get back to all the variety of places?
Yeah. Well, I just feel so. I've had more benefit from saying yes in my career than I've had in saying no. And I know that some people are like, well, you need to curate and not play and creative demand. And then I also think of Stomping Tom. And it's like, go where other people aren't, right? The idea of, like, small communities welcoming you and, like, avoid big places until you're invited by people who support your music. Otherwise, you're just, like, part of the noise, right? Like, it has to have meaning and connection for people. And so that's part of it. I think what we learned from the pause is, like, all of us went into amber and could kind of pick up our lives or whatever we were doing before and look at it. And what a privilege to be able to do that, you know, if you could find other work. And then in returning to it, it was fragile before. it's going to be fragile coming back. So how do we want to rebuild it? There was an earthquake. Are we going to like use the same materials to rebuild, or are we going to approach it differently?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, I do. I find it just fascinating, the concept, and also just when you, I think for you as well, like this idea of going where people aren't, it probably builds up your fan base, because I think that those people that you are with immediately are probably going to become bigger fans of you because you're willing to take the time, because you're willing to do this kind of thing.
Right. I mean, there's still the issue of finding work and making it all make sense financially. I'm not saying like do everything, but I am saying like, what to think of, like, I got to go to Nunavut, and I got to visit the community of Arviat, and because I said yes. And yes, I was stranded for like a week in Rankin Inlet because there was an accidental puncturing of the one plane by, like, there's like adventures, right? And I remember flying over, I remember landing on all these, you know, there was like basically storage in the front, and then there was a few passenger seats in the back. And looking down and landing on, I'm like, this is worse than a gravel road. Like, from a very like privileged white, you know, Southern Ontario perspective, I'm like, we didn't have different tarmac. Like, you know, it was what it was. And to see like landing and then going up again, and then seeing all of these little small buildings from up in the sky that look like dollhouses that you could see after looking at them for a while were churches. And then seeing a bunch of rocks piled or organized, and then like bright, bright flowers on them, and trying to make sense of that. And like, wait a second, this doesn't make sense. And then being told later, well, of course, there's no flowers. You're foolish. They're plastic. And that's where people would be buried. Or flies that you thought somebody was shooting at the pickup truck that picked you up. And like the thumps on the side of it. And I'm like, what is that? And they're like, those are just the flies. They're attracted by the heat of the engine. I'm like, that's like Jurassic Park. You know, and so we wouldn't have any of those experiences. You know, it would just be like different experiences. I'm grateful for them.
Well, and then how?
Go ahead, Brad.
I was going to ask, like, how important are the adventures then to your musical journey and also to your writing?
I mean, I think the other truth is that there's adventures everywhere if you don't get stuck and you can take the time to see them. Like, yeah. So the story about Rankin Inlet, I'm like I didn't understand why everybody's running. Like, I just heard like this big tuna can opening sound. And then I realized after that they were running because they realized that there weren't many places to stay in town. And they were like going to get the first hotel room. Basically, and then I was the dummy staying around to watch. They're like, you're gonna be sleeping in the airport terminal, which I did. I think like finding a way to like not rationalize, but like enjoy whatever good part of it there is important.
Mm-hmm.
You took my exact question.
that's pretty funny. One thing then too is that when you talk about the workshops and working with kids, like, what got you into that, and then how important is that to you?
Well, so both my parents were teachers, and I remember, like, I play guitar because I had teachers in high school who created opportunities for us to play, like the coffee houses with three different covers of Smells Like Teen Spirit, right? Like, or Leonard Cohen or whatever it was. Like, those were things that were afforded to us that encouraged me to do music and then eventually continue doing music. And so I feel like that's part of it. I think that long-term, if we want an ecosystem within music that's strong, then we need to, like, be part of advocating not just for ourselves, but just like in general, it's important. So like the time that people with with stations, with projects like yours, just communicating about music, communicating about art. And in this case, it's like going in and being another voice in the school system, other than the music teacher, saying it's important. Like in under no other teacher or person in the school has to recruit students. Like the math teachers out sitting there going, like, listen, it's going to be a math trip at the end of the year. It's going to be great. We're going to Boston, okay? But you have to stick it through. You have to stick it through. And so I think we owe those people more than just, you know, a few grants from different organizations so they can get gear. Like there should be voices in there saying, like, this is important. This is a way you can talk about your feelings, or this is a way you can make sense of your feelings. The focus on mental health within everything is so important. I'm like, well, just teach people how to make art. Think of, for both of you, the songs that saved your life, or the idea that the songs that got you through the hard time. And I can think, in saying that, I can think of five. And so what if those people hadn't finished those songs? What if they'd just been kind of lazy, like we can all be sometimes? And if they hadn't finished it, what then? Well, we wouldn't have had those songs to pull us through. So music and creation and songwriting isn't another. It isn't like magic that happens. It's something that we can all contribute to as fans, as audience members, as whatever, like people like you who are like pushing the voice out, but also realizing that we have that inside of us, and that's important.
And I think it's interesting too for us, because I mean we're much less musicians than anything else, but like it's, since we do get the chance to talk to so many musicians, I mean, and music is such an important part of our lives, it's nice because we do get to hear the stories, and I think that we get to talk about them, and it definitely makes us talk about things more, not only to other people, but just between ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I don't know. I just think, like, I'm worried that people will, because everything feels like a Netflix episode. Like our lives feel like Netflix episodes right now. Like the idea that like we visit by screen and we produce our shows or we curate the experience and we can't see anybody for real, and like everything's kind of available all at once. Not at all. And I just worry in all of that we're going to like lose the understanding of like even vinyl. You start it and you can't skip it. You start it and it comes to the end, and you need to physically lift and then just flip it and put it back on. And in that pause, there's like this kind of beautiful like meditation of like, I can't fast forward. There's no pop-up ad. That's what live shows are like.
It's very interesting to hear you. I've never really heard it presented to me before. The art is almost a responsibility of the artist to create. It's with great power comes great responsibility.
No, like, you know what? It's just like, let's not be lazy. Like, let's not be lazy. So if they're not songwriters, at least like encourage, like create space and encourage those who are, because we need it. Mm-hmm. Like we need it. We're gonna starve it in our school systems. We're gonna starve it because people don't go to shows or buy merch anymore, and we let things like Spotify be the only thing, right? And then we're surprised when it isn't there anymore. That's like what for our venues. I worry that our venues, we always think they're a great idea, and we're always so sad when they go. It's like, well, where the hell were all of us when they were trying to operate as a business? Like, let's get in there and make it important if that's what we feel. And so I think that it's not like a selfless, like, shine my apple. It's more like, this is we're part of an ecosystem that we knew was fragile before, and we really, it was confirmed after. And so in going back to bring it to that and going back to things like let's build better.
It makes me wonder, kind of, you mentioned Spotify there. We're in an era where people are no longer making full albums. They're not even often making extended plays. They're simply new artists. A lot of them are simply creating a new single every 4 months, 6 months in that range, mm-hmm. and continually putting them out there and never making a full album anymore. What is your kind of thoughts on this trend?
Well, I'm guilty of that. like the people are like, why did it take you 6 years to make another album? And my answer is like, because I was too busy. I was too busy touring. I was too busy being a parent and running a small business. I was successful enough in the touring and wanting to grow that I didn't prioritize that. I had a studio in my former space, and that was great. And I had engineers that I was lucky to work with, and that's how I made recording work. But it was always, just as you're saying, singles. Like it was. We have enough time to talk about this song, and that's it. And so it's a different thing, and a bit of a shock to be able to finish an album and to be able to present an album. Like I said, I didn't know if the label would how they would proceed post-pandemic. Like first time working with a record label, I've done everything by myself. So the idea that they're like pushing a record, and the idea that people are like receiving it so well, means that there's that room for the whole book, not just for the chapter, but there's room for the whole book. And I don't think you can fault people for playing the Penny Arcade, right? And I think I'm just lucky that I've had the opportunity to like have label support to have put together a full recording.
Yeah, because you've certainly recorded a lot of music in your career to this point. And now do you think that you're going to be more like thoughtful than about releasing a whole album, or do you kind of think you'll keep going with a lot of recording?
No, I'm going to keep going with a lot of recording. I think this is the only time I've had, and I say this with all respect and kindness, this is the first time I've had somebody who told me I had to stop. Right. Like I've got a bunch of other projects that we were chipping away at and that I'm really proud of, and we're not going to talk about now because we're talking about the new album, and it's great and everybody should stream it, but also should buy it from True North Records because it's sonically the biggest, the widest album. The horn string arrangements that we had time and the players to bring into are. Yeah, I remember like I went too far on some of the songs where like I brought them back and they're like, this is what's going on here? This is like a massive swing band orchestra, like what? And I said, yeah, like you're a folk artist. I'm like, yeah, but it's really good. Listen to it. So there would be compromise. I would put the band or the banger chord version on and then have different mixes. But I like, why not? Like, why be precious? Life is so short, you know? I just think, like, we can, I don't know. I want to leave behind a lot of, like, good and difficult work.
Well, Moon is one of my favorite tracks on the album, and I do love the fact that it's got so much going on. As well, Decorated, I really like that song.
Well, I appreciate this time. I apologize. I have to go teach.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, it's no problem at all.
Why don't you take time then to tell everybody where they can find the album one more time and keep up with you.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. So Craig Cardiff, True North, all this time running. Please follow on Spotify. Please purchase the album through True North, or even better, order it from your local record store. Have them bring it in so that there can be that community piece. I appreciate the time to speak with you guys. Thank you.
Well, thanks a lot, Craig. We wish you nothing but the best in the future, and we'll talk to you again.
We'll talk soon. Take care, guys.
Yep, you too. Bye now.
Can a song start out with a question like if there's a the heart a compass, does the soul swallow, do gold spit? Come from heaven where angels live. Whole time that I've been running, it was never a waste. Oh. back under the weight of all the mislights, wondering hesitation. All I know is I'm done with waiting. I needed you to know how there was never any doubt. My head's a lamp, the heart is a compass. Compass, the head's a lamp, the heart is a compass.